This is Wastoids.
Oh my god. Alright. Are we...
We're good.
We're good?
Or something like that.
Are we good?
Are we good?
We're good. Anita's not... Why? What's the...
Why?
What's the problem?
We're listening to the...
Preston Smith. It's such a good song.
It's
perfect, actually.
It's great. You can hear that.
Say, it's perfect.
It is. It's a good one. What up? You look great today.
Say, God damn, it's perfect. Thank you. I shaved my face.
Is that what it is?
Anita's not thrilled about. Well, it's that, and I have a... Lola keeps calling me this haircut that I got. She says I look like... that guy from that stupid movie everybody liked. You know that guy, that weird movie.
Okay.
I don't know. It's like an Irish guy or something. I don't know.
The Irishman.
The Irishman.
Is that
Barry
the one?
Coogan or Coogan, Glugan, Sugarloaf.
Sugarloaf.
I don't know.
Sugarloaf.
I don't know what the problem is with me.
Yeah,
Barry,
well.
Barry. I don't know how to say it. I don't think
I know
that's
it.
Right.
I know
there's
who
another
is.
Syllable in that last name or something, but maybe not.
Watch that.
I don't know. But he's in that weird movie where he's like hanging out with some teenagers in a big rich house. I don't know.
Oh, Saltburn.
Saltburn, not Sugarloaf. I was close.
You were so close with Sugarloaf.
Saltburn, Sugarloaf. Hey, this stream looks great and everything sounds great and we have audio. Am I jinxing it right now? But
Anita said that if everything isn't set up, she wants a refund.
Are you on? Okay, so here's the real question. Are you on the new Wi-Fi, the new internet?
No.
So I'm still on our shitty internet, even though we just finally, after 6 months, got some really good internet. You're still not on the new network. Kristen didn't.
It's not her. It's me.
Are you sure? Did Kristen provide the information?
I don't think so.
So but, it's definitely not you.
But if it's just a thing I can plug in, we're not going to do it right now.
No. It's we got this. We got fancy new down there at Hello. We got some fancy new internet. We got new extenders and.
It's all fancy.
It's supposed to be really good. So, you know, hopefully I was really looking forward to see how we handled this stream. But
we're doing pretty good, I gotta say.
All right.
Yeah, right now.
Okay. We're doing okay.
We're doing okay. Barry Keogh. Keoghan?
I thought it was like Coogan or something. I thought it was
K-E-O-U-G-H. Keogh. Anyway, okay. He is in that movie that I watched, The Green Knight, which was just okay, in my opinion.
Yeah.
You know.
Saltburn also is just, it wasn't good. It was dumb.
He saltburned those rich guys, I think, right?
Yeah, it was not a...
I still haven't watched it.
It wasn't great. I didn't play our theme music. You may find yourself I'm going to now. There we go. And yeah, I was right. Keoghan.
I like
Barry
it.
Keoghan.
What's happening? What are we talking about today? And why are we talking about it? Good question.
What we should talk
about first.
What, this Let It Be bullshit?
Oh, no. What is
the... About that?
I might have missed it.
Well, you know, let's just get the Beatles out of the way. All right. So they released, Get Back a while back. Bob EP in the house. What's up, dude?
Hey, what up, Bob?
Get Back, you know, a couple years ago. Was that a couple years ago now? Almost?
Oh, yeah.
And then yesterday, the Beatles posted a thing that was just, it was white with the Let It Be squares.
Uh-oh.
But no one was in it. And it was, but it was clearly the Let It Be squares, and it was the red apple, which if you're a real Beatles nerd, you know that the red apple is the, is what they use for the Let It Be album instead of the green album. They're releasing the Let It Be movie, which is weird because it's like, why? It's basically, it's basically Get Back, but like stupider and bad, and no one ever liked it or liked the edit. And then we get this, we get Get Back, which is, you know, spectacular.
Good. Yeah.
So now we got to watch Let It Be. We got to watch a bad edit of Let It Be on Disney Plus. I mean, I'm going to watch it, obviously, but.
I thought the big news, the big Beatles news this week was that Paul's son and Sean made a song together.
I mean, that was cool too.
I haven't listened to that yet.
But no, that wasn't it. It was, it's this. Here, hold on. Let's see. Can I do this?
I'm still, we're about to find out. Audio. Do I need to hit the.
No, I'm going to do it. So here we go. Check this out. So can you see this?
I can see it. Oh, I need to remove the thing though.
Real question.
Look at that.
Yes, look at this. Let It Be. At last, finally, they're going to launch it on Disney Plus May 8th of this year.
Why?
So yeah, if you want to watch the Let It Be movie on Disney Plus, you'll be able to next month.
Well, Michael, justice for Michael Lindsay Hogg.
Oh, I forgot we have the overlay on. Oops, sorry. Okay, so I'll stop.
I got rid of it, though.
Oh, you got rid of it. Okay, cool. I'm looking at it in a delay.
Yeah. Now it's back.
Now I'm back.
And now we're back.
Now we're back.
Look at that, guys. Cool. Production quality.
Good work. Everything's working. We're doing
it. Everything's
working. I'm knocking on wood. Yeah.
Oh, okay, so what I was going to mention wasn't the Beatles. It was going to be, I was going to mention Indie Plaza. Which is Saturday. Oh,
Indie Plaza. Yeah, that too.
I don't believe it.
It's coming up so fast. Is it September already?
Trick. It's not. It's April.
It's happening. We're going to be.
Yeah, we're going to be out in NYC. You're already there. But
I'm already here.
Wastoids will be there. We're going to be interviewing bands backstage. We're going to have stickers. We're gonna have also
stickers. I got some new stickers.
They look so good. Yep, he's gone, guys. Oh, he's back.
Stickers. Look at these.
They look great. Yeah. I can't wait to.
They're cool. I like slap one of those. You know, I sticker them all around the town. All around the town. I'm a guy about town, hanging up stickers. And these ones are so much littler. I can put them anywhere. It's like a whole new world. Those other ones were huge, which I loved. But did you know I'm in a battle with this guy? On his, like, the, I guess the overhang, like the eave of his shop.
Yeah.
It's on Orchard and there's a bunch of stickers on it. Like there's a ton of stickers on it. So I always put a Wastoid sticker on it and he always takes just the Wastoid sticker off. So one time I took the same green sticker, but with nothing on it, like a green neon sticker. And I just wrote why, hoping he would respond, but instead he just took it off. So the other day I put like five of these on to see if maybe he just didn't like the green one. He doesn't like the yellow ones either. He took them all off.
He took them all off?
Only mine. There's like 100 stickers. He only takes the Wastoid stickers off. Doesn't make any sense.
I think we've got.
Like every morning he wakes up, he goes out there and he's like, this son of a bitch.
I think that's what it is.
And then I do the same thing when I walk by at night. I'm like, he took it down already. Like it's already gone.
When I'm out there, can we confront him on camera?
I'm scared of him. One time I don't even know who it is, but one time I saw who I thought it maybe was and I got kind of scared. And
he looked pretty strong.
I'm not very confrontational.
Yeah. I get it. So, I agree. Yeah. I'm also deeply afraid of confrontation.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Anyway, hi.
Indie Plaza. It's going to be great.
Indie Plaza.
Wishy. April 20th. Snooper. I love saying the band name Snooper. 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 Who put Snooper in the vestibule? Isn't that from Maestro? Armand Hammer, Dead, DEHD. It's a special way of spelling it. It's going to be cool. It's going to be really good.
Dead.
It's going to be fun. Dead.
Yeah. It's going to be cool. I'm excited. It's always fun. It's always a good time.
It's free.
And usually it's around Banter Day, so we have like a Banter Day booth, but this year it's not. So we're going to have just a straight up Wastoids booth. I got a fancy new tablecloth that showed up yesterday.
Is it, what color is it?
It's black.
Okay.
It basically looks like this, this overlay pretty much, except just picture this overlay, but black, and it's a tablecloth instead. That's what it is.
I wish I had it to just put over me right now.
Yeah, I could get it and I could drape it over myself like a cape, but maybe I won't.
That's when we launch our cult. Yeah. Well, we're talking about April 1994, 30 years ago.
That was 30 years ago? Is that what you said? Is that right?
Isn't that nuts? Yeah.
It really, truly is nuts, actually.
This week.
I need to open my notes. I had some notes on this time.
On April 1994.
Yeah. So am I going first? I think
you are. You're first this time.
Okay. I'm going to go first. So I'll start it off with this. So we did you watch Coachella? You watch any Coachella? Do you care about Coachella? I know you've been to Coachella. I don't care about Coachella, but Blur played.
I hear it didn't go great for them.
I thought it was great. I actually thought it was pretty cool. They, you know, there was some cool stuff about it. Like they didn't have any in-ear monitors, which I thought was really cool. They were just going straight up old school. The bass player, I forget his name. He was wearing shorts that were like cuffed up and had a cigarette just dangling out of his mouth, which is always like the coolest thing ever. Even though it's like the dorkiest thing ever, it's still the coolest thing ever.
Yeah, I agree.
But no, it was cool. And then they got this group of indigenous people up on stage to do like some kind of ceremonial chant. But then they also came back a couple songs later and did Tender with them, which
that's cool.
This is going to tie into 1992, I promise. But I figured I could actually just play this and see if we get a strike. Let's see what happens here. Can you see this?
Oh.
Yeah?
Yes, I can.
Check this out. First of all, Graham Coxon is such a shredder. He's got a cool little effect going on that guitar. Can everybody hear this? You can hear this, Jason?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Anyway, I thought they sounded great, personally. Got off to a little bit of a rocky start there, but hey, they catch up.
It looks great.
Yeah, let's skip ahead a little bit here.
These dudes sound good.
I think they sound great. I think they look cool. So what did you hear about Blur? You heard it didn't go well?
I just heard that the audience didn't know who they were, or that they seemed unenthused comparatively. Yeah,
first of all, it's pretty late at night, and it's hard to be, I mean, let's get real. Can you really be that enthused at Coachella?
Well, apparently,
after you've spent all day long, maybe even like you're in your second day now at this point.
So they were like, Tyler, the Creator was up next, and Blur. I think
we watched Tyler. Tyler went on at like 11:30 or 12:30 or something at night. We watched it the next day because Lola's a big Tyler fan. As are we. We're fans of Ty Ty, but he had like a crazy setup. He had a whole thing going, like a whole set and explosions and guest stars and stuff. It was cool, but yeah, I mean, it's like this band's like, you know, 30, 40 years old.
I think
a bunch of TikTok kids.
I think the kids know who the Gorillaz are, but
Yeah, so they this plays into my thing. So April 25th, this plays into the you know, what we're actually supposed to talk about, 1994, actually. Dang, all my notes are 1992.
Shit. Guys, we're going to shut the stream down, reconfigure. I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
People can hear us. Grimes is being discussed in the chat.
Talking about Grimes?
Yeah, I guess she had a hard time.
Yeah, technical she difficulties. Had some trouble, I heard. But yeah, I don't know. Blur sounded good. Anyway, I thought everybody that I watched, I checked out Sublime. That wasn't great. Oof.
I saw that
kid. You see it?
Jacob Noel.
Yeah, I don't really understand I guess I haven't done enough research on what's happening there, but it's like, did they just like find him or something? Like where did he come? Like, why is he all of a sudden, exist and he knows how to play guitar and he doesn't have a shirt and he has chest tattoos? Like, where did this guy come from out of nowhere? He's in Sublime.
I think that when you're Bradley Noel's son, you're born with at least one chest tattoo. It just comes pre.
And where's Lou Dog? Does he have a Dalmatian? Does he have Lou Dog too? I mean, I have so many questions about it, but he's not. He's singing like a. In the two songs that I listened to, I mean, I saw a couple videos.
Yeah.
A while back, like a few weeks ago, and they were like bad cell phone, and I was like, look, I'm sure he's this just getting is better than it sounds here.
Yeah.
And then I listened to it in Coachella the other day. I watched a couple clips, and I was like, no, this is. He's singing like. 17 full. Are they even 17 octaves? He's singing out. He's just not singing the song in any way that makes any sense to me. I can't really. It's like he's here and then he's here and then he goes here and then he's trying to do the like the grumble thing, you know, like the kind of ska stank, and it's like, no, dude, stop. Just
the stuff I saw, it was. It just didn't sound good, is what I would say. Like, his approach was unique. Didn't sound like his dad. But no, also didn't fine. Sound... I mean,
I've never seen Rome with Sublime. I'm sure he didn't sound like Bradley Noel either. But or maybe he did. I don't know. Maybe that's why they got him. But yeah, also, Anita says, poor Rome. For real. Like, poor... They're just like, listen, buddy. this kid, what's his name?
Jacob.
Jacob finally got pubes and he's in the band, so you're out of here. You know?
Rome was like, oh man.
I knew this day was coming.
Yeah.
It's his birthright.
You know, they say Rome wasn't built in a day and he wasn't kicked out of Sublime.
Yeah, there's definitely some metaphors there about Rome falling, I would say.
The fall of Rome. It's a good band. I remember a band called that.
Yeah. Okay, so anyway, yeah. So
Sublime was big in 94, right?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. But back to Blur. So April 25th, they came out with, they released Park Life, which is a great album. And that, I mean, I thought the way Damon was talking on stage, he mentioned Girls and Boys. People seemed to really know what that song was. At least in the, It seemed like they knew what was going on there. So I just assumed that was like a TikTok song. And so that's how people knew who Blur was. But apparently they didn't really know who Blur was. And that's something that I kind of noticed when I was looking up Blur. And it's funny because Anita and I, Blur came to Phoenix in like 95 or 96 or something. And they played the Electric Ballroom. I may have mentioned this at some point before, but I just remember thinking when I saw the ad for the Electric Ballroom in the New Times that Blur was playing, thinking like, how is Blur playing Electric Ballroom? That seems like such a small venue for them because they're huge. I just assumed they were huge for some reason, maybe just because they weren't from America. And I just, for whatever reason, just assumed that if you're a British band coming to America and you're on
you MTV, must be,
you yeah, must you're be on huge. Major. You must just you're be huge. In a big, yeah, you must just be huge. Which wasn't the case. I mean, they were playing Electric Ballroom. And then later when I realized, like, oh, Weezer played Electric Ballroom, and I saw that show, and they were much bigger than Blur, apparently, at that point. But some stuff I found out about Blur, the Blur Park Life album. It was originally going to be called London, and there was an album cover that was just I really like the Park Life album cover. So I like just talking about album cover in general, so album art in general. So I tried to find the original to see if there was, because apparently there had been many versions of mocked up of what this album was going to be called. The name London was their manager at the time. I forget his name. He came up with that title. And he's like, you guys should just call it London. It's about like London culture and whatever. And they decided not to. And then I guess they stopped working with them after that. But at some point in time, it was going to be called, here, let me pull this up.
Bad choice on his, you give these guys one album title they don't like and they cut you loose.
And they get rid of you. They're like, buddy, get out of here. All right. So let's see what we got. So here's the Park Life album cover. Can you see it? Yes, you can.
Yeah.
So this is what it ended up being. Did it just die?
Did it just go away? I'm here.
Oh, okay. Oh, it just weird. It just disappeared for me. So this is what it was. It's got two dogs. This racetrack. I don't know what's happening here. I could find one alternate cover for when it was going to be called London, and it was this. Mm. Or, I'm sorry, not London. At one point after it was going to be called London, it was going to be called Soft Porn.
Mm.
Which
that's what that image screams to me.
I actually really like this album cover.
It's pretty good.
I think I maybe like it better.
Yeah.
It's very of the times. The font is cool. I like the border. I found this on Reddit and somebody was pointing out that it sort of looked like a Pulp album cover.
Oh, sure.
This one, different class. Yeah. And I think they're just thinking the black border and like kind of the bubbly font.
That almost looks, the Soft Porn almost looks like a ViewMaster slide.
It does. Yeah, it does. It's cool looking. Like the grain. It's got a good grain on it. But this, whoever did this, they also worked with Blur. So it's probably the same person. I couldn't even find really much information about this, but I could find some information about this. And the person who did this, the art direction and took the photography and all the cool stuff on this Pulp record, which came out a little bit later. I think this one came out in 95 actually. They had worked with everybody in the UK, Blur and Oasis and Elastica and Pulp and all that, all damn bands. So yeah, I was like, all right, so how big is Blur? Cause I mean, just going back to like, yeah, people didn't know who Blur was at Coachella. That sort of seems shocking to me, and not just because it's been 30 years and these are kids, but then I was, you know, I was actually having that same thought, but I didn't know that people said that about Coachella, but I had that thought about when they came to the U.S. in 96, thinking they were much bigger than they were. And I looked it up to see what their record sales were like, and they're shockingly low. Like, how many records would you think Blur sold of this record in the U.S. at Park Life? Do you think it's gone gold?
Is that the one that has song number two on it?
No, that's the self-titled record. But even that, I mean, I won't make you guess for it. So basically every single Blur record has barely sold anything.
Like, wow.
Like, it's really kind of crazy. Actually, the one with the only one that went gold was the one with song two and Beetle Bum on it. That was a huge hit. And that was them. I think that song was them sort of fucking Nirvana. I think the label's like, we need a song that's more like a Nirvana song. And they just like wrote a dumb song that said woohoo.
Yeah.
And anyway, so that one went gold. But like, do you remember like that, the song Tender we just saw? I love that record. It's called 13. That has Tender and Coffee and TV on it. It's a really great album. That one sold 136,000 copies, which
yeah, these are not. Yeah, these are not big numbers.
No. And so then I was like, okay, well, this is crazy, because you go through and you look at all these Blur records. I mean, they had like eight records or something, and really none of them were big hits in the U.S., even though I kind of feel like everybody knows who Blur is. But again, maybe it's just I'm just massively wrong. But then the first two, I looked at the first two Gorillaz records, and they were massive. Like they were totally massive, which is crazy to me. So just to think of like, I guess it doesn't make, I guess it's just funny to me because I think of Blur as for some reason as being bigger than the gorillas, but the gorillas were like colossally bigger than Blur.
Yeah. When I saw the gorillas at Coachella, whatever year that was, I think it might've been 2013.
Yeah.
But yeah, they headlined and it was huge, but everybody knew those big gorillas hits. You know what I mean? So it's weird. It's weird because you but would think the gorillas, that's the side project.
Records. Yeah, but I looked at their records and the gorillas have eight albums now at this point, and the first two are big. They sold, I think 8 million worldwide or something, 2 million a piece in the US. But almost everything after that kind of sucks. Like it really starts dropping off after that.
Weird. So Oasis won the battle in terms of record sales.
At least in the US, yeah. So Toko's asking if it's gold in the US or the UK. So it was gold in the US is what I'm, gold and platinum in the US. I'm basing everything in our home country. But Blur was obviously much bigger in the UK. I mean, they were, but you know, you just think of them as even still, like, I guess it's considered classic rock at this point, 1992. That was 94. I don't know why I keep saying 92. 94 was 30 years ago. And, you know, so this is like the classic rock of today.
It's true.
And you would think that record sales, especially, and that was like the heyday, you know, in the 90s, like that was probably peak record sales for pop music. It's just kind of nuts to think that they weren't selling that much. And now it makes sense why they were playing the Electric Ballroom and maybe didn't even sell it out. But I'm bummed I didn't get to go to that show.
I wish you would have. Yeah.
I know. Okay, moving on. So did someone mention Kurt Cobain?
He was mentioned.
Kurt Cobain died in April of 1994.
Yeah, that was a big moment.
Big deal. It's a big deal. He died April 5th, 1994. And the next thing I want to talk about, let's see, I gotta get rid of this here. The next thing I want to talk about. So he was married to Courtney Love, as you may recall.
I've heard of
what
her.
What I thought was crazy was her record came out a week later. a week after Kurt Cobain died. Now look,
well,
I get it. Like, you know, records are planned well in advance. You know, you got the machines moving. But I gotta say, I think little bad timing to release your record when your husband died, you know, the 7 days to the day. It was April 12th is when the record came out. Kind of nuts.
That's crazy.
This immediately rumors started that Cobain actually wrote this record and not Courtney, which was long denied, and the claims are seemingly unfounded by the people who I guess say that, but I don't know. I got no beef with Courtney Love. I don't really care about Courtney Love either. I do know Marco mentioned Billy Corgan just now is going to say that, like, you look at the co-writes on this record and there really aren't any. Then you look at the co-writes on all of her other records and it's like Billy Corgan and a ton of Billy Corgan songs, basically every record after this one, which I'm forgetting what it's even called, but it's got Miss World on it. Let's see. Let's play some jams here. So just, I mean, you be the judge. You tell me if you think kind of sound like some Kurt Cobain songs, but we'll see here.
All right.
You know, because you've probably never heard these things, I would imagine. you've never heard Hole from 30 years ago. Why would you?
Miranda's bringing up great points that she hates. Oh boy.
She hates who?
That Courtney Love hates. This, we're just looking at your desktop.
Oh, you're just looking at my desktop?
Yeah.
Dang it. What did I just do?
Courtney Love hates Taylor Swift, apparently, and Lana Del Rey now. Those are updates this week.
Thank you. How do I share my stupid? What did I do? Oh, I did desktop one. That's why. So now can you see it?
Oh, yeah. Now we're in business.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Look, I love this record, genuinely.
So I guess the question is, I mean, a lot of these songs need a light soul. Just this hole's great. A lot of these songs, what else we got here? We got Doll Parts. A lot of these songs sound kind of Nirvana-y. I mean, I was reading some, you can't hear this now, can you? What the heck?
I don't know why, but.
Did you see it? You just couldn't hear it?
I could see.
See this share screen?
So clearly.
Mess. Now, let's see.
Here we go. I'm hearing.
So I guess the question is, was she... I read an interview about that she was talking about, you know, I guess answering to whether or not Kurt wrote any of these songs. And she was saying no. But she was saying that she was in a lot of competition with Kurt.
Sure.
So maybe she, like, is she just trying to write Nirvana songs? Is she just inspired by Kurt? So it's just naturally, I mean, she's married to the dude, you know? So it's like, are these Kurt vibes just rubbing off on her? Or, I don't know, maybe he did write some of the songs and just, you know, maybe she's like, hey, help me out with this one. And so.
It's weird, right? Because on one hand, she would have just been naturally influenced probably by some of the songwriting going on in the home. I guess they do sound Nirvana-y to me. What are we looking at?
I was just gonna keep playing some jams.
I like it.
Why does this keep happening?
That's a good go.
I think this is Violet. This is probably my favorite whole song on this record, but I think it's the one that sounds the most like a Nirvana song, at least the chorus, right?
Yeah. All the stars are just like little fish. This one's Nirvana-y for sure.
It's the verse. Like the choruses are the Nirvana of the Kurt vibes. Like the verses sound like something else, you know. But then as soon as all these choruses just sound like Nirvana choruses to me. Anyway, I'm not a good producer. I'm not good at managing 7 screens and windows.
It's not the easiest thing. I thank you for doing it though. Thank you.
It is difficult. It's a weird record. Another crazy thing. So it is a great record. Like her first, the second whole record. The first one didn't really do that great. This one did good. I mean, I don't know. I expected to see way more trash talking on the fact that this record was released a week after Kurt died, but I couldn't really find any. It was well received. It had these three really strong singles. It went platinum. It's a big, I guess, a monumental record of the 90s. 1994 was a very awesome year. April was a little, I mean, this is like start of the second quarter, so April's not like, this is when things are just starting to come in. I think most of the really great records came a little bit later in the year, but
that's right.
But yeah, another thing is just the whole bassist, Kristen Baff, died of a heroin overdose right before the tour. So within about a month and a half of Kurt bailing on life, that's a rough thing to get through.
Those are heavy times for Courtney Love.
Heavy times for Courtney. Yeah. So from there, I was just trying to think, like, what, you know, where did things go? I mean, I remember in 1994, I guess where I wanted to jump into was just punk music. It's like, I guess, sort of like Kurt Cobain took the grunge era with him
in some ways. Yeah.
Kind of, you know, it's like it sort of marked the end of an era, because you get this crazy thing where Green Day's record came out a little bit earlier, I think. in 94, right before this. But I mean, Dookie is, I mean, it just had its 30th anniversary. It's such a massive album. I think that sold like 10 million records or something crazy, or way more, actually. I feel like it's way more than that. And that opens the door for the Offspring Smash, which came out in April of 94. And that broke all kinds of records. It was,
it's crazy.
An independent album put out by Epitaph. It sold 11 million records worldwide, 6 times platinum in the US. I mean, just think about that, like what that meant for Epitaph. And then from there, you know, it's like, Stranger Than Fiction, Bad Religion, I think. Isn't that what it's called?
Yeah.
Pretty sure that came out that year or shortly thereafter, maybe the next year. You have the Rancid Let Go album came out in 94, and then Outcome of the Wolves came out in 95, and that was super massive. Yeah, I feel like that's just when that, at least it, I mean, that's really, I think that was my introduction to punk music, was through, you know, 120 minutes watching Keep Them Separated. But I mean, like a little bit before that, I knew who they were because I bought a Offspring CD, the album before Ignition. I bought it at Kmart in Montana with my cousins on a road trip to Canada. And they kind of like looped me into the early stages of punk music. So they're like, you should buy this Offspring CD. It's because, so we can all listen to it, because they were familiar with them somehow. And then when we got to Canada, we were watching Much Music, and I remember NoFX came on, some interview with NoFX on Much Music, which that ended up being called something else later. I forget, like M2 or something. I can't remember what it was called.
It did later, change.
It used to just be like a Canadian, it was like the Canadian MTV.
Yeah.
Which eventually came to America, and then they changed the name, and then it just went away. I don't know what happened to it, but I remember watching that with them on that. And but then, you know, like kind of forgetting about it and still being sort of into the Beatles and whatever else, but just having those CDs, but like still getting into REM and live album came out.
Throwing Copper
came out in April. I was remembering I bought that sort of like just because I liked Lightning Crashes for some reason. Because you were playing it so much, it just got in my head, and I remember buying that.
Love lyrics about placentas falling to the floor.
Yeah,
it's really a weird love lyric
about placentas. No, but I think I got that through like the music club thing. You know, it's like
BMG.
Yeah, then my cousin got Dookie and was like, you got to check this out. And then from there, it's just kind of, you know, okay, now I'm into punk music. I'm going to go back and listen to these Offspring CDs. And I don't, I guess like whatever you think about, how do you feel about the Offspring?
I don't feel that much about the Offspring. Yeah. I don't hate them.
It's funny the direction that they took, because yeah, they were like, well, I mean, sort of like a post late 80s punk band, you know, like that weird, like in between before pop punk sort of merged with like whatever was happening in California in like the late 80s.
Yeah. It's weird
became this like a pop band.
Yeah, exactly. I was gonna say, like, by the time you get to Pretty Fly for a White Guy or whatever, it's like just joke music, you know?
Yeah.
So that's,
but they're huge.
Huge.
But that's the crazy thing, is they've like maintained this status.
Anita said they have 20 million monthly listeners on Spotify.
That's gnarly, right?
It's
think about. I almost can't believe it. But I thought I had this pulled up somewhere. I must have closed it. I was gonna play the Keep Them Separated video, but we all know how that goes. We've heard that stupid song, right? I don't know if we need to listen to it again. You know, it's got the like,
yeah,
which I thought
give
was
it to
cool,
me, little, baby.
You know. Not that one. Not
oh, that's one. A different one. That's Pretty Fly for a White Guy. You're right.
That's Pretty Fly for a White Guy. Yeah, keep them separate. You got to keep them separated.
It's funny you mentioning the Sublime guy doing the octave jumping. Yeah. The very first show that my teenage punk band ever played, we covered Self-Esteem by The Offspring. Wow. And the bassist, my best friend Zane, he couldn't decide what octave to sing it in. So he picked a few. He tried it low, first verse pretty low. Shot it up for that second verse. It was really
showing his range. A real dynamic.
He really was. It was people loved it though. So that's that. It's a weird.
Yeah. Tim says Tim Armstrong and is above all other 1994 artists. I agree with that, I think. I mean,
well,
isn't it crazy though that like Op Ivy, basically like half of Op Ivy and Green Day became the biggest bands ever in 1994.
It's
1994, 1995. Like, just
so weird.
The timing of that is so strange.
Yeah.
But I guess it was that's really what I was sort of piecing together is like, I guess it was just opening up. It was ripe. It was ready. It's like Kurt Cobain's dead. What's next? Oh, we got this, this punk music that's ready.
What's funny is that you almost wonder if like the music head honchos, the executives, did they just think that that was the same thing as Nirvana, basically pop punk?
I guess. Yeah. Maybe they're just like, this is the new grunge, man. This is, like,
I guess,
the stuff that's going on in like the Bay Area, these bands, this is like a new thing, you know?
Cause
they were, I guess they were kind of right.
I mean, cause that Offspring record,
whether it was fabricated or not,
the Offspring record has some grungy qualities, if I remember right. You know, not full grunge, but kind of.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because the Offspring, especially Ignition, I mean, they were like a fast punk band.
Yeah.
They had that like sort of, like I said, it's hard to define really what it was, because punk was kind of goofy in between like the early to mid 80s and the early to mid 90s. It kind of went away for a while. And I mean, people were still making music, but it became sort of like this. I don't really like many records from that era, from almost, even bands that I like. It just,
yeah,
they get,
yeah,
they almost turn into like light metal at times, you know, sort of like ballady, like pop metal.
Yeah.
In a way.
That makes sense. Yeah. You're right.
There's a lot of reverb going on.
Yeah.
Ignition, like the production was really bad. Like there's some good songs on Ignition, but it's like the production is so goofy. Everything's just really clean. It just doesn't sound, everything's just really clean, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
And I don't really love that when it was so crusty in the early 80s, especially the West Coast punk stuff. But so anyway, speaking of crusty and speaking of Nirvana, when I was looking through April, I was shocked to see that. Oh, no. And I lost my clip of this, too. Oh, well, whatever. I was shocked to see that Puddle of Mud had an album come out in 1994. And
wait,
I did
really?
Not know that Puddle of Mud was around in 1994. Did you?
No, I definitely didn't.
Yeah, so I was like, am I just stupid? Like, okay, I guess maybe they were. So I looked it up, and so Puddle of Mud was around in 1994. They actually started in 1992. Maybe that's why I keep saying 1992.
You got mud on the mind.
Deep digging on the mud. But yeah, they released a 7-song EP in April of 1994. And then it looked like they played a state fair, and then that was kind of it. Like, that was their 1994. They're like, guys, we're gonna put out this EP. We're gonna play the Missouri State Fair, and well, you know, we had a good run. Nothing happened. A few years later, they tried one more time. They put out an 11-song debut album in 1997. Didn't happen. Broke up. Okay, we're done. Then, the kids, never give up your dream. Never mm-hmm. give up your dream. All right. 1990 in the year 2000.
Year 2000.
Somebody on the Family Values tour hand delivered a Puddle of Mud cassette tape to Fred Durst, our pal Fred Durst,
the Kingmaker.
And he said, "Listen, your band sucks," and he's like, "That's okay, because we broke up." He's like, "All right, well, a few of these songs are pretty good. Let's get you out to California. We're gonna re-record some of these bad boys. And you're going to be huge." And
sure enough,
they came out with Come Clean, sold 3 million records. And you'd think that this guy, Wes Scantlin from Puddle of Mud, who was often compared with Nirvana. Was that you with the story, Nirvana and Puddle of Mud?
Yeah, my dad.
We talked about that on the podcast, or you just tell me that the other day.
I think we just had a normal conversation where I mentioned to you that my dad texted me a Puddle of Mud song. Was like, check these guys out.
These guys are awesome.
And he was like, it sounds like Nirvana. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that they were trying, they were, you know, doing the Nirvana thing. And maybe, I don't know. I guess Fred was trying to bring the Nirvana vibes back after punk. But I found a really funny, quote from Wes about Fred Durst. So Fred Durst made this band who they were. There's no doubt about it, you know. So, and Fred Durst was, you know, I guess all over the place in the early 2000s. You couldn't get away from that guy. So I would imagine that Wes was probably asked quite a bit about Fred Durst, and at a certain point, he had had enough. And I found a quote from a few years after the album came out, and Wes had found his success. He said, "Listen, this is about Fred. He doesn't write our songs. He doesn't produce our songs. He doesn't do anything for us. He doesn't even do our videos anymore. He doesn't do anything for this band. I don't know what he's doing. I don't know what the guy's like. All I know, he's like Mr. Hollywood guy, Mr. Celebrity. Like, I don't hang out with anybody except for Hollywood celebrities. And every single fucking interview I've ever fucking done, I've asked this fucking guy, I'm asked about this guy. And for me to do interviews all the time and keep getting asked about this certain individual, people think he likes write music, like he writes music with me or something. He does not do that. I don't get it. We have nothing in common. He doesn't even call us. He has his assistant call us to congratulate us on records. That's how pathetic he is."
Damn.
And then the interviewer was like, "Sir, this is a Wendy's," which is my favorite quote. Can you imagine going on that big of a rant on, I mean, even if you were like had it, that's kind of crazy to go off that hard on Fred Durst, who made you who you are. I mean, I know that would suck if like the person who discovered you
was Fred Durst.
Yeah, that would suck. But hey, it also sucks if you're the lead singer of Puddle of Mud. So like, what do you expect? Sure. Right.
Jeez. That's crazy. I didn't realize it had gone so south.
I had a clip, so I had to do the transcript instead. But yeah, anyway, to close out here, because I feel like I'm done. I really wanted to talk about Weezer is what I wanted to do, but because the Blue Album came out on May 10th of 1994, and I was like, well, of course, I'm sure Undone the Sweater Song came out as a single in April, so that'll be my in for Weezer. But very surprisingly, the first single for the Blue Album didn't come out until June, a month after the album came out. Isn't that crazy? And I was like, that can't be right. So I went to Weezerpedia, because that's much better. You know, that's like very, very thorough. And it was right. Like nothing had happened. But what I did discover there, and this has nothing to do with April, but shortly thereafter, May 8th was Weezer's first performance outside of California. And they played Arizona. They played Tempe, Arizona. It was their first show outside of California. And it said they played at a place called Giant Sand, which I was like, maybe they played with Giant Sand.
Weird.
But then I dug in, and it's like, no, they played with a band with Elastic, Pure Joy, Dave Allen, Flathead, The Pearsons, and Andy Gonzalez at the Giant Sand venue, which I couldn't find anything about.
That doesn't ring a bell.
In Tempe.
Weird.
So that was the Blue Album tour. That was their first tour outside of California, and they actually played three shows in Arizona that month, which is nuts. So they played at Giant Sand, wherever that is. They played at The Rock in Tempe, and then they played at Boston's the next night at the end of May. So
did you see any of those shows?
No, the first time I didn't see Weezer until 96 on the Pinkerton tour. That was the first time I saw them. And then I went through and looked at all the Arizona shows, and it looks like I went to about five Weezer shows in that era from 96 to whenever the Green Album came out, and I was like, I'm done.
Yeah. Tim says so Flathead was the best Arizona band ever.
Well, they played Weezer's first show in Arizona, so there you go. Tim, what's up with Giant Sand? Do you know anything about this album? I mean, that could, or not album.
Venue.
Venue.
It is weird.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe it's just wrong, but a couple different sources that I found online said giant sand. So I don't know. Okay, I'm done. I guess I'm done.
You sure? That's it. You can throw something else in if you want.
Nah. Nah, I'm good. I do need to get your stuff pulled up though here though.
So all right. So you know, I like to do these anniversary reminiscences. Look at like a month, and I just picked April 1994 because it was 30 years ago, but there was so much going on in April of 1994, it turns out. Pretty auspicious. So what I did was I checked out the Billboard Top 100 for the week of April 16th, 1994.
Okay.
And I found some interesting stuff. I want to touch on the top five, the Billboard top five, before I get into actually anything that I find interesting. So real quick, we've got R. Kelly, Bump and Grind.
I saw that. That was like his first major hit, right?
Yeah. R. Kelly, thoroughly canceled.
Didn't age very well.
Yeah, he's got some terrible, terrible stuff. Number two, The Sign, Ace of Base. Also canceled.
Wait, Nazis. Is the base got canceled?
Yeah. Ooh. Fascist stuff. Oh. I was obsessed with that song, though, contemporaneously. In 1994, I could not stop listening to The Sign by Ace of Base. It was definitely my favorite song. Without You / Never Forget You, Mariah Carey. That's number three. Another big hit. Jam.
Yeah.
Number four, Crash Test Dummies, and the song is
How do you know that? You one. Like that song?
Do I like it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I do.
Me too.
It's weird.
It is weird, but I like it.
I remember being a kid and not understanding if it was supposed to be funny, because there's that line about the kid lurching all over the church floor, he barfed, and I thought that must have been hilarious, but I was wrong. It's a sad song.
I like the video.
I only remember... my primary point of reference for that song, I think, is like the Dumb and Dumber soundtrack. I think it's on that.
Yeah.
Anyway. So that was number four. And then The Power of Love, Celine Dion.
I was thinking Robert...
Huey Lewis.
Or Robert...
Huey Lewis? Yes. That's the power of love. Every time I sing...
That was earlier. That was much earlier.
It was much earlier than 1994. That's Back to the Future era.
Yeah.
Every time I sing, I get hit with the delay and I freak out. So anyway.
A little slap back.
Got a little slap back. Speaking of slap back, we're going to jump down to number 10 on the Billboard Top 10. We're talking the song Streets of Philadelphia by Bruce Springsteen. Do you know this one? Do you remember this one?
Of course I do. I remember this one. This one right here.
Here we go.
Take that overlay off. Let's rock some Bruce.
Here we go. And bring that volume up a touch. A human touch, as Springsteen would say. Does this not sound exactly like Twin Peaks?
Maybe if you take out the drums.
Yes, take out the drums. Just the synth. Hang on. And
there he is.
There he is. That's the boss.
Jack Antonoff. I mean,
does Jack have a goatee?
No,
I don't know why. Why does Bruce Springsteen, why does he look older in 1994 than he does now?
Well, now he's ripped. Now he's got the... What's with goatees?
Let's cut out of the song and get back to...
Oh, we're down here?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, we're back.
I just back. What's with goatees? That's the answer. 1994, probably peak goatee era. If I'm wrong, correct me.
And I'm guessing Jerry Seinfeld maybe even had a goatee joke.
Did he?
What's with goatees?
What's the deal with a goatee?
Very topical for the time.
I think Springsteen... Goatees. I think he looks cool there. I don't know what that says about me.
You would. Well, because you love Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah. Yeah. I do. But so, you know, particularly, I like disheveled Bruce. He looks very divorced, really? Dad.
Yeah. He's always kind of disheveled.
Yeah, that's true. He has moments of it, for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to think of a time when he was really put together too much.
Oh, like the Tunnel of Love era. He's wearing bolo ties.
Puddle of Mud era, is that what you said?
The Puddle of Mud era. The mustache episode is what we've got here. And the boss got a facelift, Anita says. Very correct.
Yeah.
Well, so I like that song. And I think it's actually a good song.
It looks like he got breast implants, too, from what I could tell in that last picture.
Really, really ripped.
From the Phoenix show, yeah.
So that's from the movie Philadelphia. Jonathan Demme apparently asked Springsteen to write a song for it. And he said, I want it to play in the malls, is what his suggestion was. So, Tim's bringing up Bruce on the Curb Your Enthusiasm season. Very, very good. Very funny.
See, I'm listening to Larry David right now, and it's making me really want to watch the last season of Curbed. I haven't watched it yet, but
you're going to dig it.
On a podcast. I love how Larry David laughs in real life.
I don't know if I even really know it.
Loud. Listen to I don't listen to the podcast Smartless often, but I saw someone posted that Larry David was on there, so I've been listening to that one. Will Arnett kind of bugs me sometimes. I like him, but
he seems grumpy.
I like him on a podcast. No, he's just not very funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
He's not very funny. And Jason Bateman, you can only really take Jason Bateman, you know, like on TV sometimes. Like in Arrested Development, really, is kind of the only place I can take Jason Bateman. I don't know if I need him on a podcast either.
Marco refers to this Springsteen song as the feel-good hit of the summer. I'm going to point out that it is obviously a very sad song.
Yeah, this is something. I mean, I think Bruce nailed it. I mean, there's nothing. I'm just, when I was playing that song, I was just sort of picturing myself shopping at the Gap, you know?
So, what I like about that video, which was done by Jonathan Demme and his nephew, Ted Demme, was that's Springsteen's real vocal for the video. That's not the studio version. So he's wearing a lavalier mic and they're walking and he's really singing it. So we're hearing that version. But it's also a thing where he cut a studio version of the song with like a big band or a four-piece band and ultimately decided he had to pull it and go with the demo version. So it's a sort of a Nebraska situation. I like when he's very sparse and I like when he's kind of on his own. I think it's a good song.
Hey, man.
But
that's cool.
We've got more drum breaks to get to. Number 16. Okay. On the Billboard Top 100. Can I get you to pull up Innocence? Return to?
Yes, you sure can. Let's see if I can figure out how to do it.
Everybody's going to remember this one. And if they don't, I don't know. Here we go. Look at that.
Can you hear it? Can you hear it?
Yeah, it's probably just like a cinematic sound. There's no... Yeah, there you go.
There it is.
Everybody knows that. It's like the fruit is going in reverse. Drum break. Sexy new age vocals.
This is a jam.
This is one of my favorite lyrics. Feeling. Emotion. Emotion. So, either this song is the best song or the worst, and I think it's hard to say which.
I mean, I'd say it's in the middle somewhere. Heart, You know, I don't think it's the best song or the worst. I'm happy to be in the middle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. All right. We can cut it.
I don't really like the chorus.
You don't like the...
I don't like the chanting.
The chanting? Well,
I like the beat. I like the music. I like the synth. I like the drums. I like the verses. I can get down with the verses, but then...
You don't love
It just gets a little too, like, circle of life. It's too... I don't know. It's such a soothing song. And then all of a sudden out of nowhere, it's like, it's just too abrasive.
It's a really weird song because Michael Cretu is the producer guy. And he thought, what if we could combine breakbeats and new age with chants, Gregorian or otherwise?
I mean, and new age music was kind of popping
huge
off right around this time too. It was like massive, yeah.
Huge. And this is a pretty big hit.
End caps at stores of just new age music. Remember the little things you can go up and push the buttons and hear the sounds and all the chanting and
This came up in the other day. I was chatting with Decoy Deloy, Chris, and he brought this up. He does an incredible version of the chant, as you might imagine.
Yeah.
But we were just talking about how it's kind of like music you would hear at a rainforest cafe or something like that, you know? Those vocals were by Defang and Ige Dwana, who are from the Amis. They're indigenous people in Taiwan. And they recorded that while in Paris in 1988. He sampled it, believing it to be in the public domain, mistakenly believing it to be in the public domain. They sued him, and now they get the royalties for this song.
Well, good for them.
But that drum break, and this is important, is When the Levee Breaks.
That was a good drum break.
It's a Led Zeppelin. It's a John Bonham rip, which is hilarious.
That's pay Bonham?
It's Bonham. No, I don't think they had to pay him. I don't know how they cleared that. That record, he also samples like U2 and some other stuff. It's a really weird, strange situation. But oddly enough, huge, huge hit. I found, I didn't include it in the stuff I sent over to you, but I watched a fairly recent live version of that song, and it did not, wasn't so good. Not so good. Nah.
Not so good.
Let's just say the production is doing a lot of heavy lifting when it comes to listening to that song. Yeah. All right. We're going to keep cruising way farther
down.
Speaking
of heavy lifting, what are we getting to now?
We're getting to something really heavy.
Preview of your links here. So, I'm working the link board.
Number 44 on the Billboard Top 100 for April 16th, 1994. Let's pull this up. This is a song by one Glenn Danzig, and the song is Mother. As you can see, it says Mother 93 live, but we'll get into that in a second. Let's give Glenn a second. Oh yeah. Mother,
tell your children not to walk my way. Man.
What are you manning? I gotta know.
Remember the videos that sort of did the fake music over the like bad guitar playing videos?
Yeah.
There was one for this song that was maybe like one of the early days really funny things on the internet. And then of course the time he got punched, we've mentioned a couple times.
Yeah. Glenny Danzig. Tim said, no offense, but he's out of here. Burritos are here.
Damn. Yeah. He's just so sweaty and greasy. And what's with the fish? Why was the fishnet tank a thing? I saw a video of Black Flag, of Henry Rollins singing Nervous Breakdown in a black fishnet t-shirt. And I was like, dude, what? Why was that the punk guy thing?
I didn't mean to pin that. There we go. So, can you play the video where he gets knocked out? I'm going to mention this about that. One, other things are interesting about Danzig than him getting punched. That's the number one thing everybody talks about. Especially,
it's the most interesting thing about him, probably.
What's interesting, though, is that this song was a hit in 1994. Do you know when it came out, though?
I guess
1988. It was originally included. Yeah, it was originally included on the first Danzig album. He wrote it about Tipper Gore and Al Gore and like the Parents Music Resource Center, which made them put the So he put it on his album. He called producer Rick Rubin in the middle of the night and said, "Hey, I've written the song I've been trying to write my entire life. Here it is. It's Mother." And so he thought that it was going to be a huge hit, and he was right, but not when it came out. It was 6 years later, in 1993, they included a remixed version of the song called Mother 93 on the EP Thrall Demon Sweat Live. They said it was a live track, but they just put audience sounds over the real track and remixed it.
Yeah.
And that
sounds very Danzig.
And then it became a huge hit, which is so funny to me. So they, as if like they needed to, they changed the title to Mother 93 and then further changed it to Mother 94. Everybody says I'm getting pressed about Glennie. No, I know Danny Mariano knocked his ass out. And there we go. My friend Justin's in this video.
To the promoter being disorganized. Glenn refused to push his time back. And we, along with three other bands, were forced to play after him on the condition that he announced the other bands. He didn't announce the bands and closed the show. So we all got effed over. I went to talk to him. He started yelling. So did I. Then he put his hands on me. He pushed me into the wall and yelled, "F you, mother effer." I defended myself. And there's Danzig's side of the story. He said that was him trying to get me on camera punching Danzig him so he could sue me for some S. When everyone was breaking it up, he cold-cocked me. What are you going to do? Who won? Danzig is still touring and going strong, and the Northside Queens aren't even a band anymore.
Hey. I don't know if that was... It's Northside Kings, first and foremost.
Yeah. Wait, so I'm confused about who was even
I don't know.
Narrating there. That was very... very confusing.
Anyway, Danzig. I like that. I like the first probably four Danzig records a lot.
Do you like the Misfits?
Yeah, I like the Misfits too, quite a bit.
I like the Misfits.
We Are 138 was the first song I ever learned how to play on guitar with another person. It's pretty easy. Just throw that out there. Not a huge accomplishment.
There's two guitars in that song?
No.
You guys just played the same thing together?
We played the same thing together. That's cool. Yeah. Zane, again, before he got on that Offspring cover.
We got to get Zane on this show.
Oh, we should do it. He would love it.
Have him cover some Offspring songs for us.
He saw Aliens with me too. So
yeah.
We got lots to talk about. So anyway, at this point, I kind of venture away from the Billboard charts because I start looking at Danzig stuff, and then I start looking at Rick Rubin stuff, and then I find myself looking at the Beastie Boys, and I think, oh, well, I mean, the Beastie Boys, Ill Communication came out in 1994. They gotta have been doing some cool stuff in April. So I checked. Ill Communication came out in May of 94. But in April
kinda sucked.
Huh?
Said, yeah, April kind of sucked. May was where it's at.
May was where it's at. We should have waited a couple weeks to do this. In April, though, Adam Horvitz of the Beastie Boys, he got sentenced to 200 hours of community service. He attacked a TV cameraman at the funeral for River Phoenix in November of the previous year, 93. So, you know, that's kind of a falling down a Rubin hole. Exactly, Bob. I live my life in a Rubin hole. So he punched a guy. He had to do community service. But that wasn't all that the Beastie Boys did in 1994 of April. They also played a benefit for the Native activist Leonard Peltier. Do you know him at all?
No.
He's still in jail. There's a really good documentary that you should watch about it called Incident at Ogallala. And he was kind of like a cause du jour among musician types. People were very, you know, sort of like Free Nelson Mandela type stuff or Free Tibet, which the Beastie Boys were also super, super involved in. So on April 29th, they played a benefit for him at California State University with Rage Against the Machine, Cypress Hill, Quicksand, some band called Mother Tongue, who I don't know, X, and the Stanford Prison Experiment.
Damn, it's quite the lineup.
Pretty huge lineup. I didn't know...
Sounds like Lollapalooza 99.
It basically does, yeah. I don't know who Stanford Prison Experiment is, and I don't really know Mother Tongue.
That band. I don't remember. I don't know why I know who that is, but I remember them from back in the day.
Let's pull up a little of that clip I sent and kind of skip to the end. That's when the Beasties are rapping. It's pretty incredible. Pretty bad footage, but you can still get a sense of how they do a whole kind of like spiel before they get going about not pressing against the stage and also not moshing in a way that is violent.
The video footage from these camcorder shots is always bad, but the audio is always kind of cool.
Yeah, it sounds pretty great. All right. Beastie Boys.
Do you remember there used to be I gotta stop this over here. There used to be like a mail order thing where you could get dupes of like camcorder concerts. I think it was called like brown bag or brown label.
Right.
Something you could get, like me and my friends got some. We got like a Sublime, speaking of Sublime, we got a Sublime one, we got like a Rage Against the Machine one. A couple other ones. It was pretty fun, but it was like this kind of a thing. It was just like crowd shot, you know.
So you didn't know.
Someone would submit it in, and you would just be like, "Oh, I'm gonna get, you know, Radiohead in the Nile Basement or something."
Right, but you wouldn't know like the quality.
No, and they were replicas, so they just, I'm sure, like by the time, you know, just keeps copies of copies of copies and stuff. So, but it was cool. It was like send $5 to this dude and. Someday you're going to get a VHS tape.
Well, I mean, pretty...
That's where a lot of these things come from. When you find these old things, I think they're from those tapes that were circulating around, you know?
Makes sense. I'm glad that we have the footage of it. Leonard Peltier, though, very interesting guy. He's part of the American Indian Movement, AIM. There was an FBI shootout. He's been in jail for decades now. Keeps coming up for... parole or commutation of his sentence or anything like that, but still hasn't happened. People are still out there. So then I start, at this point I'm pretty far off the map, and I start looking to see who else has done music about him, and there's a ton. The Indigo Girls did a number for him. They did a Buffy St. Marie cover. There was the band AC, anal, I can't bring myself to say the other word because I'm
You're so polite.
I'm so polite. Everybody's favorite band, U2, they did a song called Native Sung, which eventually became the song Vertigo, which is one of the worst songs of all time.
Oh.
So they did that. Harry Belafonte, Pete Seeger, Jackson Brown. Staged performance in 2012 that really got me and tied things all back around was previously our boy Little Steven from the E Street Band. He did a Leonard track, and it's It's really bad, but this video is really cool. So let's pull this up. Let's see. Look how good this design looks. This is not a test. Where is the justice?
You know, they just don't make, they just don't edit like they used to. Wow, look at that.
Look how cool it looks. Okay, hang on. Here he comes. There's our boy.
Listen to those toms, roto toms or whatever.
Yeah, and then wait till it drops in, man. Get ready for this. This is incredible spin.
Bottom. What just happened? Oh,
wait. That's right. It's a faux reggae song. We got to get to him doing his. Anyway, we can stop now.
Oh God! All right.
I don't know why it's a reggae song. That shocked me for some reason.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect that.
A lot of buildup. Lil Steven, what I will say about him is that his politics are almost always right. He's right on the money. I mean, like, I completely agree with his deal there. His Sun City protest, also very important. So he's on the money, but musically, boy, that was pretty goofy. But I love that video. So
it is a cool looking video.
Took us all the way around, right back to Springsteen land. They were not working together at that point. He came back a few years later.
They have a bit of a falling out.
They did. I think they did. Mark says, "What in the fever dream is this? Wow, for real." Bob also asked if we were involved in that Bad Brains tribute, the benefit concert for HR.
Oh, yeah.
No, we've just been shouting it out on the news because I think it's a cool cause. So that's the reason there. But yeah, there you go. It's a 1994 long journey around from Springsteen to Little Steven.
So much good stuff.
I couldn't find
90s. So much great Springsteen universe happening there in 1994 of April.
Well, that's it.
That's it.
That wraps around.
Time really flies.
It does.
Well, we did pretty good. I mean, our sound works. We had some video and audio.
I think,
you know, this is where it's at. Our overlay worked.
The chat was lively.
Great
you
job,
guys.
Man, in that overlay. Yeah, the chat was incredibly lively.
Yeah.
Thank you to all those people. Tim, I'm jealous of your burrito. I wish I was eating one right now.
Seriously. Seriously.
Do you have a burrito waiting for you?
No.
Downstairs?
No.
No?
Oh, I forgot about that whole deal.
Yeah, you didn't opt into the burrito thing?
I must have screwed up and blew it on that. So
did Kristen tell you about Burrito Day?
She did.
Okay, good.
This was me. I did bad.
This one was you. This one was all you.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, man. Maybe
we're going to let it rip.
Extra one for you somewhere.
I'm going to go investigate.
Go investigate that burrito situation. And thanks, everybody. Episode 52, I think.
I was going to say 53, but you're right. It's 52.
Yeah, we did it.
Vortexers, thanks for hanging out.
And yeah, Jason, I'll see you out here for Indy Plaza.
Just a couple days.
Yeah, we'll have some cool videos. So be on the lookout for that. All right, cool.
Yes,
thanks, everybody.
Yes. Talk soon. Rise.